continue to follow a major story.
Deadly shooting in Midtown Manhattan.
Police say this was definitely a targeted shooting.
Late last year, Luigi Mangione allegedly shot and killed UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson in New York. Right here. We started working on this video a while ago, so we don't have all the details yet. But one thing is already clear. Not a ton of people are mourning his death.
People celebrating this, this is a sickness. Honestly, it's so disappointing.
Why would you be in such a celebratory mood about the execution of another human being?
This is revolutionary leftist evil.
They're now literally cheering for the cold-blooded killer.
And let's be honest. Yeah, obviously. American healthcare is beyond messed up. Let me just give you a quick example from my own life. I want to show you something. This is a real bill I got 2 years ago. It's from the day my daughter was born. We were very lucky. No complications, no special meds, just about the most bare bones delivery you can get. That one day in the hospital cost us nearly $6,000, or 2 full months' income for the average American. And that's with both of us being on UnitedHealthcare. So, you know, if we had been living in New York... never mind. Again, we were lucky. The average birth in the US costs nearly 11 grand. Insane healthcare bills like these are the norm here. Americans collectively spend an insane $4 trillion a year on healthcare, and we just can't afford it. It's hard to know exactly, but it's estimated that about 500,000 Americans, 500,000 people every single year, are forced to declare bankruptcy or sell their home to cover their medical debt. You probably knew this already because, like all of us, you have the internet, and you've seen literally any GoFundMe campaign. About a third of them are people needing help with medical bills. And this is all in spite of the fact that we have a decently high insurance coverage rate in this country. Millions of Americans are still uninsured, to be clear, but for the 90-ish percent that are covered, insurance sucks. Even before any of the claim denials start rolling in, and don't worry, we will get to that, most of us are paying several $1,000 deductibles and copays before we even get the privilege of our claim being denied. There are issues at almost every level of our healthcare system, but insurance companies are clearly the biggest pain point. So, let's dive in. Howdy everybody, just wanted to stop by real quick to let you know that I'm now posting book reviews on Means TV. We've got some bigger exclusive content in the works, but I'm working on reading more nonfiction this year, and I figured, why not share my thoughts? My first review covers Invisible Doctrine, The Secret History of Neoliberalism, and it's available right now for all Means subscribers. I've got my second one in the works too, and that one is covering The World After Gaza. Turns out I'm a pretty harsh reviewer, so if you're looking for extra content, or you want to see if a book is worth reading based on some YouTuber's opinion, check out the link below to get 20% off your Means TV subscription. It's a cooperatively owned, explicitly socialist streaming service. It's got some amazing original content, and every sign up through my link directly supports this channel. So thank you for considering it. All right, back to the video. Over the last few months since Thompson's death, we've seen a flood of horror stories on social media from people sharing how companies like UHC have treated them or their loved ones. From denying necessary chemotherapy sessions to multi-year delays through six-figure bills being denied and bankrupting families. Health insurance companies are despised, and for good reason. Just take Cigna. They cover about 20 million Americans, and on average, their claim denial rate is about 15 to 20%. How do they get to that number? Well, they spend literally less than a second and a half denying your claim. According to a Cigna doctor, quote, "We literally click and submit. It takes all of 10 seconds to do 50 at a time." And just hold on now, because Cigna isn't even one of the worst ones. UHC has a 33% denial rate, and the reason they're so high up the list could be because they use an AI model called NH Predict to make some of these claim decisions, and it allegedly has a 90% error rate. This sort of stuff is no less murderous than what Mangione allegedly did. Hundreds of thousands of people die or lose everything because of this blatant disregard for human life. So while this was murder, whoever did it, The fact that a tiny fraction of the violence the ruling class subjects us to is being thrown back at those who benefit the most from our suffering is hardly surprising. When care is rationed like this in the wealthiest country in the world to enrich unnecessary middlemen to an absurd degree, it should be more surprising that this didn't happen sooner. You might have already seen this circulating online, but the profits of all these despicable health insurance companies have doubled, tripled, or even quadrupled in just the last 10 years. Don't worry though, all that money is making it back to the people really putting in the work. Health insurance CEOs have raked in tens of millions of dollars a year denying desperate people's necessary claims. And yes, thankfully, they make just enough to set some money aside for millions of dollars in political contributions to both sides of the aisle, making sure this lucrative arrangement doesn't change. And let me be clear and take a break from these statistics for a second. No other country is like this. The term medical bankruptcy is practically unheard of outside the US. There is no equivalent to the tens of thousands of preventable deaths caused by the lack of insurance, underinsurance, and denial of procedures that we have in this country. But if we want to understand how health insurance became so toxic, we need to step back from the present, zoom out, and go back to the 90s.
You've got mail.
Because it's at this time that things changed pretty dramatically in the world of insurance writ large. See, for a few years, the insurance industry, both medical and otherwise, went through what's called a soft market. A soft market, in insurance, is a moment when prices come down as insurers offer riskier policies to try to capture more of what's become a pretty saturated insurance market. This is a normal part of the business, and according to Jay Feinman, the author of Delay, Deny, Defend, the pendulum between hard and soft markets usually swings every 4 to 6 years. Starting in 1988, though, insurance companies launched into a soft market that would last an unprecedented 12 years. The reason this was a problem is because soft markets only tend to work for a short time. Eventually, those riskier policies mean more claims, because the events they're covering are, of course, riskier. And more claims means lower profits. Normally, the market eventually swings back, with insurers upping their rates, offering more expensive policies, and restricting who gets covered. But this extended soft market prevented that, digging into insurance company profits and causing annual losses in the tens of billions of dollars. At the same time as insurance enters this long soft market, two more things happen. Medical costs keep rising, and the US gets hit with a string of natural disasters, the most dramatic of which was probably Hurricane Andrew in 1992.
And clearly there's been a lot of damage, but this can only be described as total devastation.
If you weren't around back then, until Katrina, Andrew was the most expensive natural disaster the US had ever seen, destroying entire cities and resulting in insurance companies receiving over 600,000 claims and needing to cover about $16 billion of damages. Money that they just didn't have. 11 major insurance companies declared bankruptcy, and those that weathered the storm took heavy losses. But events like Andrew are what insurance is there for. When you pay into an insurance policy, you are promised by the insurer that if you set money aside today and everyone pools their risks, some unforeseen event won't lead you into financial ruin. If something goes wrong, you're covered because they took that risk. And sometimes, the risk doesn't pay out. Sometimes big events just mean there are negative years. And while this doesn't have to be a problem for all insurance companies, it's a really bad one for for-profit insurance companies. Between the extended soft market and the sudden need to pay out way more claims, insurance companies were in a tough spot. Mergers and acquisitions consolidated the market into a tight oligopoly. And this profitability dip mattered more than ever because, on top of all the rest, more insurance companies had suddenly moved to a more aggressive for-profit model. The standard insurance model used to be the mutual company. Unlike stock companies, these are insurance companies that are owned by policyholders themselves. If people pay into insurance more than is used to pay claims, or if any investment of the funds returns a profit, those funds go back to policyholders or get used to reduce everyone's premiums. It's a decent setup that makes the insurance company work much closer to the interest of those who actually use it, because those who use it are technically also the owners. In the 80s and 90s, though, as profits became slim and all these companies were scrambling for access to capital to stay afloat, the most optimal survival strategy became demutualizing, turning the company into a stock company. This meant getting money from outside, and that meant suddenly insurance companies had shareholders demanding increased profits and returns on their investments. Enter McKinsey. You might know McKinsey from such bangers as getting everyone at your job fired or taking 2 years to come up with trash cans. Figuring out how to deliver to shareholders is McKinsey's bread and butter. If it means cutting personnel, reducing benefits, automation, coming up with a new way to overwork staff, that's not their concern. They're there to make the number go up. So when big insurance companies hired them in the 90s in this mad scramble for profits, McKinsey zeroed in on what made insurance companies less than maximally profitable. They were being insurance companies. And the problem could be solved if they just stopped. Specifically, if they stopped approving fair claims. See, before the 80s and 90s, insurance companies were structured based on the idea that they'd be profitable or not based on pricing out policies correctly. It was the job of insurance underwriters to define what was covered, at what price, and who it could be sold to, making predictions and hopefully making them accurately enough to keep the company afloat. But for you, once you enrolled, you could essentially treat a covered event as risk-free because the insurance company had agreed to cover the risk for the price of the policy. There was a guarantee they would pay the price, and the company's claims adjuster had only a very limited role in figuring out if what you made a claim for was covered, which most of the time, it was. And if there was ever any doubt, insurance companies had an internal policy code of ethics that incentivized them to settle in favor of policyholders over their own interests. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Nationwide is on your side. You're in good hands with Allstate. You get the idea. But McKinsey suggested a new approach. Delay, deny, and if it comes to it, defend. Delay claims reimbursement until people give up. Deny as many claims as possible and hope people won't fight back. And if they do fight back, put on the boxing gloves and get the most expensive lawyers you can afford to make sure they'll regret trying to take you to court. This is now the standard for health insurance. And the only reason we know about this strategy is because of a court case against Allstate. In 2008, the company was forced to release internal documents showing what McKinsey's influence on the company's practices had been. And wow, is it bleak. McKinsey slides told insurance companies to treat their customers as if they were in, quote, a zero-sum game. Recommended that the company offer aggressive, quote, take-it-or-leave-it offers to strong-arm desperate people into deals as low as $50 for bodily injuries, and to delay policy disputes for a standard 3 years to force people into bankruptcy and desperation. And if all else fails, take people to court knowing full well that someone relying on insurance for an expensive medical procedure isn't going to have the money or the time or even simply be healthy enough to get into an expensive legal battle with one of the wealthiest companies in the world. On top of this, McKinsey also suggested Allstate adopt a computer program called Colossus. If human claims adjusters might feel a shred of human compassion, Colossus, according to McKinsey, would firmly stick to making lowball offers and maximizing profitability, something McKinsey guaranteed, quote, shareholders will notice. Before long, McKinsey was in every major insurance company's headquarters giving the same pitch, and everyone eagerly applied their recommendations, making insurance increasingly legally complicated, increasing automation, and denying more claims. This is the standard now, and very few politicians actually care to fully acknowledge that. While policies like the ACA, Obamacare, have helped a lot of people to get on health insurance who previously couldn't because of things like prior conditions, which is a fantastic thing, the bill wasn't written to challenge the profit of these greedy corporations or undercut their ability to screw you over in other ways. Through things like Medicare Advantage, for example, federal money doesn't go directly to covering your necessary procedures, but instead lets private insurance companies increase premiums and rack up billions in profit by essentially subsidizing them. It's a big part of the reason the last 10 years have seen such a boom for these companies, because policies were written with middleman profits in mind. But we have solutions. Bernie's Medicare for All, for example. Modeled on the likes of every other wealthy country's nationalized healthcare system, a single-payer plan run not-for-profit could both increase coverage and reduce costs for millions of Americans. For-profit medical insurance would cover only a tiny portion of procedures, and most of your health costs would almost vanish overnight, saving Americans $450 billion and almost 70,000 lives, according to an estimate in The Lancet. Instead of paying over $6,000 in premiums to a private company, for example, you would pay a 4% tax for just $1,240 a year for the M4A. In other words, you save $4,000 a year. Because when you cut out the need for profits and all the private spending going into things like advertising and developing new claim-denying AI, you save a lot of money. An insurance policy that doesn't need to pay out $10 million a year to some CEO is inherently going to cost you less. No billing department to spend hours of your life sitting on hold with, no random bills in the mail, just a single system of accounting, making sure you get the care you need at no or low cost. This is the reality for millions of people living in just about every high and middle income country in the world. Looking at these other countries, the benefits are obvious. Beyond the fact that they literally cannot fathom the concept of medical bankruptcy, it's simply not true that these countries face things like longer wait times or worse quality care. While different countries have slightly different metrics, more people in Germany, France, and Australia can see a doctor the next day than in the US. 4% of Americans wait 4 months or more for non-emergency surgery, compared to 2 and 0% in France and Germany. And doctors in Sweden and Australia report patients having a hard time getting specialized tests and care at half the rate than doctors in the US do. The whole wait times thing is BS, and usually based exclusively on the mess that privatization has made of the British NHS. As for the quality of care, we have a lower life expectancy than Cuba, a country we've embargoed and cut off from the world for 60 years. Why? They don't treat healthcare like a business, but as a responsibility to their citizens. Can you imagine that? What that would be like? Instead of watching your loved ones die because healthcare scalpers want to make more money. The point is, this is unsustainable. Bills like mine just can't be the norm. There's no way to keep going at this rate, with costs going up every year, CEOs pocketing millions, and hundreds of thousands of people dying preventable deaths while leaving behind mountains of debt to their family. The fact that we've seen millions of people cheer on somebody's death should be a wake-up call to the ruling class. This reaction would only be surprising if we weren't constantly surrounded by the much greater violence of capitalism on a daily basis. That instead, their response has been shock, condemnation, and doubling down on fear-mongering with jackbooted cops and corrupt officials just shows how loose their grip on public opinion is becoming. More people than ever are seeing the cruelty that makes profits flow, the cruelty inherent to this system, and it's only a matter of time until this violence is put to an end. Whoever shot Brian Thompson was one person. One person, if it was Luigi, with incoherent median voter-type politics. That one person shook the ruling class to its core. Imagine what organized, politically informed resistance to these practices could achieve. We're only powerless as long as we choose to roll over and accept being kicked, spat on, and laughed at by the corporate and government elite. That doesn't mean bands of roving vigilantes, it just means average people taking the time to educate themselves, learn how capitalism functions, join socialist organizations, and say, enough is enough. We're not working until our demands are met. This shipment isn't leaving port until our demands are met. These trains are out of commission until our demands are met. The era of invincible capital is coming to an end, and it's our job to make sure it happens quickly.